This is KHEN LPFM Radio in Salida, Colorado, and this is Truth Quest. And tonight I have Dr. Eric Carlstrom and Terry Hall as our guest from the Trans Texas. Oops, I've got it. She's the head of the San Antonio Toll Party and the Texans Uniting for Reform and Freedom. And Terry grew up in Silicon Valley, earned a BA in English from UCLA, where she was also drawn to political science, particularly how the media impacts politics. While there, she also received the Chancellor's Service Award for outstanding commitment to philanthropy. She and her husband have found their niche in business as business owners and chose Texas as the place to plant the roots. And Terry is a mother of 7 children whom she educates at home. Wow, you really are busy. And when she saw the door open to unlimited new taxation without accountability through the statewide toll mandate, without a vote of the people, Terry was pressed into service, and she now serves as the founder director of what's been dubbed a taxpayer revolt, the San Antonio Toll Party, to prevent the double taxation of our freeways and to promote non-toll transportation solutions. In 2007, she also launched a statewide nonprofit group, Texans Uniting for Reform and Freedom, TURF, committed to educating and defending citizens from this new shift, tolling and privatizing our public highways. TURF has 100,000 supporters all over Texas, including members in 22 states. And so they, along with their partners across the state, have enjoyed many successes, including unseating 4 tollers, including Terry's own state representative, delaying construction of San Antonio's first toll road that was already 100% funded with gas tax funds in 1981. And I think I'm going to go ahead and let you finish out anything else you might want to add on that. That was a little longer than I realized, but being just an hour interview, I want to get into the meat of this, if I can, with you.
Sure.
And Dr. Carlstrom?
Well, just to clarify again, the organization is called TURF.
That's right, Texas TURF, and it's texasturf.org if people would like to go to our website and get more information.
And TURF stands for what?
Texans Uniting for Reform and Freedom.
Uniting for Reform and Freedom. Okay, we have had on this radio show in the past, Terry, we've had Bill Molina, who made a movie called Truth Be Told.
Yes, sir.
And
that's right.
And we have had Jerome Corsi, who's written a book called The Late Great USA, The Coming Merger with Mexico and Canada.
That's right. I'm familiar with both gentlemen. Work with them both closely. They're wonderful advocates for the taxpayers.
Okay, so we have some background on this, and just to let you know where I'm coming from, I teach geography at a university in California in the Central Valley, in Turlock, California State University.
Oh, sure. My husband's parents are from hail from Turlock.
Okay, great. Not many people know where it is. But,
that's right.
But I have used that movie, Truth Be Told, in my human ecology class, and so I'm aware of these issues, and we're certainly interested to get an update and see how things are with you. I just to kind of start the ball rolling, perhaps, yesterday I had one of my students come into my class, actually to my office after class, and she is a middle-aged lady from Mexico, and she said that Mexico has changed radically over the past 10 years due to the imposition of these toll roads that are being built by foreign companies. So I suppose that this is all part of a somewhat larger agenda, which might have to do with the North American Union. And I guess with that, I'll just turn it over to you and ask you what you see happening there right now.
Oh, absolutely. We have seen that happen since 2003. Actually, we'd have to go back to 2001 in Texas, when all of these laws started to be changed. There was a constitutional amendment put on the ballot here, and the Texans bought into it, thinking that they were finally going to get some relief to congestion on their highway system, and they didn't realize what they did was they opened the door to allowing our highway department to literally run amok and turn our existing highway system into a chopped-up, segment-by-segment system of toll roads. And you're right, just like in Mexico, this is a global problem where they're turning our highway system over to foreign entities, and really they control our right to travel by pricing ordinary Americans right off their freeway system with very punitive and very high tolls. And from there, 2003, the legislature opened the door, I mean, a Pandora's box, to allow this to happen on a widespread scale. And we, the citizens, started organizing. A group in Austin started in 2004, right after the legislature passed a very big omnibus bill that related to all of this. And from there, our group started in 2005, and TURF started in 2007. And when I say our group in 2005, we started really just as a local effort. It was the San Antonio Toll Party. It's obviously a spinoff of the Boston Tea Party, the taxpayer revolt, because literally all of the subsequent issues never came before the voters. Each one of these highways, as they converted them into toll roads, and some of them falling into the hands of these foreign companies, they never came to the voters on that. What the constitutional amendment that I referred to that was passed by Texans in 2001 actually said was that they can just now sell bonds and borrow against future gas tax revenues in order to use that money to build roads now versus pay as you go. Up until that time in Texas, unless you had the cash in hand, you didn't build the road. And so it just started some borrowing, which, of course, my granddaddy said you shouldn't be owing anybody money. If you don't have the money, you don't build it, which I think we need to get back to that in America really fast during the bailouts we're seeing just about every week, it seems like. Well, that's all the Texans voted on. But there was, of course, very vague ballot wording that the governor and the legislature has since exploited that has a little phrase in there that says they could use these bonds to build freeways, toll roads, bridges, turnpikes, gives kind of a whole list of things. And then it says at the end, and other mobility projects. And that other mobility projects language is what opened the door to the Trans-Texas Corridor. And there has been an absolute uprising among the grassroots, landowners, urban and rural Texans alike, to rise up against this Trans-Texas Corridor, which your audience is already knowing through your interviews, I'm sure, with Jerry Corsi and Bill Molina and the movie on our efforts here in Texas, that this is about an international trade corridor that is about an expansion of the West Coast port of Mexico, Lázaro Cárdenas, I believe is how it's pronounced, and the Chinese government, along with Walmart, and we also found out HEB is a huge supermarket chain here in Texas. They are also involved with that port activity. And they want to get all their goods, their cheap Chinese imports, into our country more quickly and to market faster and bypass our mostly West Coast ports that are jammed up with Chinese goods. And they're going to do it by hijacking Texans' land, our private property, and handing it over to a foreign company to be able to toll Texans to use their own highway system. It's unbelievable. It is the Kelo case wrapped up in a different colored bow. I'm sure that you are familiar with the Supreme Court case that I believe it was in the summer of 2006, was Kelo versus the City of New London, where they were trying to take people's private homes and property and hand it over to private developers for simply economic development, because the government figured out that they could make more money on a tax base from a hotel than they could from your home. And that, of course, was undermined by the Supreme Court decision, which now has allowed us to basically strip our private property rights in this country and allow this sort of open door to toll all of our freeway system and do the same thing. I mean, that Kelo case was huge for the globalists.
Okay, Terry, if I could interject here. I've written an article, which is on a couple of my websites, called the New Proposed Federal Energy Corridors, Just What Are They? And at the very near the end, I compare these proposed 3,500-foot-wide, two-third-mile-wide energy corridors, or the West-wide energy corridor, which would go from all the western states from Seattle down to El Paso. I compare that with the Trans-Texas Corridor, and I say here, this is just for information, Corsi's book reveals that the 4,000-page environmental impact statement for the Trans-Texas Corridor reveals that the 1,200-foot wide, that's four football fields end to end, involves 10 lanes of highway with five lanes in each direction, of which three lanes are for passenger vehicles and two lanes are for trucks. The environmental impact statement also includes six rail lines running parallel to the highways, with separate rail lines in each direction for the high-speed rail, commuter rail, and freight rail. The design also calls for a 200-foot-wide utility corridor that would include pipelines for oil, natural gas, and water, cables for TV and data, and electricity towers. Now, also, the TTC, as it is envisioned, is designed to be an alternative to the existing interstate system. It does not work with the existing state system. It's to be a separate toll road that abandons the existing interstate structure without attempting to supplement it. And again, TxDOT has contracted the construction and maintenance of the Trans-Texas Corridor to a Spanish multinational corporation, Centro Concesiones de Infraestructuras de Transport Capital Group, or Cintra, which is forming a partnership with the San Antonio-based Zachary Construction Corporation. And according to Corsi, the TTC is the beginning of a continental network designed to move intermodal goods that derive from global trade. As you mentioned, bringing in huge containers from China in through Cardenas, Mexico, way to the south of Mexico, and then up through the middle of Mexico and eventually into Kansas City without any border inspection at the U.S.-Mexico border. And here I've just finished up saying the Trans-Texas Corridor calls for building 4,000 miles of highway, railway, utility, superhighways in Texas over the next 50 years at a cost of $184 billion. And the 4,000
miles... It'll be a lot more than that, actually. And as we've been digging into this nightmare of a project and the details, as Jerry Corsi, of course, has done so well in his book, but I'm telling you what, they are now trying to convince Texans that they have abandoned the Trans-Texas Corridor. When we had hearings take place in 2008 that was about this Trans-Texas Corridor 69 project, which is the second leg. The first project was supposed to parallel Interstate 35, which, as you know, runs throughout many states north-south, starting in Texas. And the second one, TTC 69, there were 28,000 comments that were given in the public comments during the hearings, and we had somebody at nearly every one of those, I believe it was 54 hearings in total, and they literally went through them at a breathless speed. They did them in just a matter of weeks and had all of these folks. We really rallied the troops, and Texans, of course, rose to the occasion. And when we put in that kind of comment and that kind of radioactive blowback coming from the citizens, they got the message loud and clear that this was not going to be a politically popular or acceptable project. Well, so they've been coming out now trying to say that the Trans-Texas Corridor is now dead. And they're trying to convince all these landowners and everybody to just, you know, cool their jets, so to speak, and just calm down and everything's fine. We're just going to expand the existing Highway 59 that runs through much of the route that was proposed. Well, not one minute order has been reversed. The chapter of the Transportation Code has not been repealed. Not one contract with Cintra or now a second Spanish firm got the rights to the TTC 69, which is the second leg, as I mentioned. That's going to another Spanish company called ATS, also teamed up with Zachary. You see the pattern here that San Antonio is ground zero for the highway lobby when it comes to this global international trade corridor that's trying to get built through our country. Well, we don't buy it. We know that since nothing has been actually done, all they're doing is putting out talking points and trying to do a bunch of double talk saying that the Trans-Texas Corridor is dead. We know better. Nothing has changed. They're just going underground. And we wanted to alert your listeners to that because they may be hearing these rumblings that, oh, yes, Texas was successful, and they killed the Trans-Texas Corridor. You know, their executive director of their highway department came out and said that the Trans-Texas Corridor is dead. When you actually parse the words, just like we're the ones that actually read these bills that they keep putting forward, you know, oh, he's like, Congress sure doesn't read it. Congress sure doesn't read bills, but We the people do, and our state legislature is in session right now, so we're literally fast and furious reading through a whole bunch of bills because we know that we have to look for every little possible conceivable way that they can continue this. And we're finding that nothing really has changed and that they're just calling it a different name. And it actually says in his talking points that the original Trans-Texas Corridor as conceived is dead and that we are coming up with a new name. So now they have this new development contract or this vision for transportation, as they call it. It's called the Interconnectivity Plan. So that's the new buzzword for the Trans-Texas Corridor, and be watching for it. And, you know, the Federal Highway Administration has, and Congress, in fact, had deemed I-69, Interstate 69, as an international trade corridor back in 1995. So it's not a surprise that that's why they want this thing built. But it was supposed to be, as Eric mentioned, it was supposed to be an interstate. This isn't supposed to be something that is outside the interstate system. And they've now latched on to the Interstate 69 project, and they're trying to turn it into this Trans-Texas Corridor, interconnectivity, whatever you want to call it, concept. And this doesn't work with the interstate highway system. Why would anybody in their right mind pay a toll to a foreign company to run through literally thousands of miles of a network in our country instead of taking a free interstate highway? Truckers can't afford the cost of paying tolls for every mile they drive. They can scarcely afford the high gas prices that we're seeing now. We've already seen the protesters by the truckers over the gas prices and the crisis that we're in with dependence on foreign oil in our country. And toll roads certainly aren't going to be the answer. So we have to ask ourselves, why are we building a parallel network? What is this really about?
If I could just jump in here, I think you mentioned that they've changed the name now from Trans-Texas Corridor to, what do you call it, Federal Conductivity Plan?
It's an Interconnectivity Plan.
Interconductivity. Not connectivity, but conductivity. Okay.
And no, connectivity. It is like connection. Yes.
Okay.
Interconnectivity plan.
This is the same strategy, I think, that has been used now with the North American Union. In other words,
the
North American
changed.
Union is dead. But of course it isn't. So as you say, this is a strategy to try to get people to stop paying attention.
To go to sleep.
Go to sleep. And really, in my opinion, I mean, and I showed this Truth Be Told movie to my class, and you know, I think we kind of agreed that the whole nation is behind what you're doing in Texas, and we're really grateful for what you're doing, because this, of course, is the beachhead for this whole new system that could essentially destroy the country. Now, here's what I have in this article too. The TTC will cut communities in half. People will have to drive tens of miles to get to the nearest overpass to see a neighbor or to get to
the other side
of their ranches. It will involve about 1 million eminent domain notices and will destroy 584,000 acres of what is now farm and ranch land. These farm and ranches have produced food for America for generations. And as you mentioned in Supreme Court case Kello versus the City of New Orleans, the Supreme Court decided that eminent domain could be used to seize private property from U.S. citizens, even though the purpose of the land seizure was to benefit a private corporation.
That's
and the
right.
decision says right. nothing that specifies that private corporation can't be a foreign corporation, such as Cintra. So this whole thing is a terrible deal for Americans. We lose our private property. We lose our ability to travel. We can't afford to travel anymore. This is not designed for travel for normal Americans.
Well, I have to bring in here, if you don't mind, something called the Agenda 21, and the listeners may be familiar with this. It was from the UN, and it's come down through executive orders and some other administrative rule changes in some of our federal agencies. It's come down from different little pieces here and there in certain bills in Congress, but it's really about something called sustainable development, and I don't know if you might be familiar with the actual term.
Yes, yes.
But it's also part of talking about these energy corridors, the Trans-Texas Corridor, as far as the transportation corridors, utilities, telecommunication lines. Well, there's also the fact that the feds are taking over more and more of our private property as lands that are set aside as part of federal land grabs. And that's happening all over the place as well. And what the goal of Agenda 21 and sustainable development is to really get the masses of the populace in the inner cities and make them dependent on mass transit so that the government can control people's movements, and really just turn it into an elitist globalist society, that the rest of us become little serfs in their fiefdom. We're just supposed to be yes men and employees and shake our head and thank you for our handout checks that come from the government. And we're there to serve the globalists who are going to make millions and if not billions of dollars off of this network of whether it's tolled trade corridors or off this other system that this kind of shadow government that's really taking over through NAFTA and some of these global trade agreements. That was just one piece in this very big puzzle of global elitism and undermining the sovereignty of our country.
Well, we totally agree, Terry. We've talked to various people about Agenda 21 before, such as Michael Shaw of Freedom Advocates.
Yes, yes, and that's a great website to go to.
That's a great website, and I've actually had the chance to get to know Michael a little bit and have lunch with him a couple times. But to go back to your idea, and he will be coming to talk to my class in about a week. The goal of the globalists, you say, is to get the mass of the populace to move into large inner cities. In fact, they have a name for these things. They're called human settlements. Isn't that right?
I have seen that term. Yes.
Yeah, and then smart growth.
Yeah, and another
yeah,
name.
They're smart growth. Smart growth. Policies or how they do it. I mean, if you go into just say your city council or look on the website for local government in your community, you will see the strands of sustainable development and smart growth everywhere. That is the new buzzword, especially with this environmentalism that we've seen. This isn't just because somehow we've woken up and decided that global warming is this real threat to the nation. This has been a plan put in place very carefully by radical environmentalists. Now, I think we all agree that we need to be good stewards of air. You know, we want clean air, clean water, and being good stewards of the environment. We're certainly not opposed to that. What we're talking about is radical environmentalism that is using this green trend that we're seeing, whether it's, you know, through commercials and making it this popular culture sort of a trend. It's much deeper than that. This is really about government control of people's freedom, their movements, their pocketbook, their family size. I mean, everything is wanting to have it to be touched by the global elitists. And one way they do it is through this environmental law. And in your community, if you go to these websites, like I was mentioning, they'll say we have a smart growth meeting, or come to your city council chambers to talk about sustainable development for our community and livable, walkable cities. You've probably heard these types of terms. And that's what it's really about. This is about the sustainable development agenda, and they've kind of learned how to make it acceptable and palatable and trendy for people to choke down, all in the name of being green and being good stewards of the environment. But what they don't realize is they're cutting off liberty and freedom and choking ourselves off from having we the people, the grassroots, be the ones that control government, and that government serves at our pleasure rather than us serving at the pleasure of the government.
Terry, another terms that I've run across are continuity of government and intergovernmental agencies.
Oh, yes, and there's also the non-governmental agencies, the NGOs. And that's how these UN bureaucracies are, these global UN bureaucracies are taking over different parts of various regions of the world. It's not really through one country or another. These non-governmental agencies, they're the ones who are putting forward restrictions, let's say, on family size that we've seen. NGOs.
Regionalization is another term you're hearing a lot thrown in there.
Yes, yes. And, I mean, there's certain things, too, that, I mean, they sound really you know, benign. Like, it's not a big deal to, you know, go back to local growing of your own food and these types of things. But when you look at the trend of the plan that's involved with all of this, a lot of this environmental push has to do with globalism. It's really not about being good stewards of the earth. It's about government control of people.
How is this corridor affecting the people in Mexico?
Well, you know, I don't, what I do know, I haven't really thought much about that you bring that up, Melody, but one of the things we are seeing is that the vast population of Mexico is extremely poor. And it's really only a cartel of families that control that country. And they're the ones that have the discretionary income to even use the toll roads. Most folks in Mexico can't even afford to have their own home, clean water, you know, a sewer line or any place to, you know, have a waste system at all and put food on the table, much less afford to own a car or to have any kind of mobility. So this network of toll roads is really about multinational corporations moving their goods through and control the security of the toll roads more than they can on just the regular Mexican highway system. So a lot of it is just sort of an easy way to move their goods without having to hassle with a lot of the gang violence and other corruption that's inside Mexico.
You know, one of the
Go ahead.
One of the other things I was going to bring up is there's a film done by John Harris that gets into the fact that a lot of these governmental agents, government entities in our country are listed on Dun and Bradstreet.
Yes.
So, and that takes them outside the purview of our
federal law. Yes.
Yes. And so by them doing that, they're.
I don't understand you, Melody. Can you explain that?
Okay.
Like the AIG bonuses, if I could just jump in.
Go ahead.
The AIG bonuses, those were given to British AIG employees, and so they're outside of the federal income tax structure of the United States. So all of this, you know, bloviating by Congress right now about them saying, oh, well, we're going to get those AIG bonuses back, you know, because this is wrong, you know. Because they use the bailout money to pay their, you know, executives these large salaries. Well, they were British employees. Our government has no reach over British employees or anything about their salaries or their tax structure. So that's right. I mean, they send things over to other, what would you call it? I guess other stock markets and other systems so that they're outside the reach of the sovereign grip of the United States.
Yeah, in about 1946 or 1947, we had the Administrative Procedure Act, which kind of opened up these government entities to become, well, I don't know if you want to call them, become corporations of sorts that put them outside of that purview. And so that's in the congressional record. And
I would love to interject a book that is really good on globalism, aside from Jerry Corsi's, and it came out after Corsi's book, and it has a whole chapter in there devoted to the Trans-Texas Corridor and Texas fight. It's called Dangerous Business, and it's about this slouch toward globalism, and actually right now it's going at a very rapid pace under the Obama administration, but it's by Pat Choate, P-A-T, and last name is C-H-O-A-T-E. And Pat is most known for having run as a vice presidential candidate alongside Ross Perot back in the 90s.
Oh,
but he's actually,
really?
Yes, he's an infrastructure expert, and he has worked with trying to protect the U.S. manufacturing industry for a long time, knowing that what happens to countries that don't have their own manufacturing of their own goods anymore, how that literally will cause our country to implode when we're no longer a self-sustaining country. If we're not, I mean, look at our food supply. I mean, the other day I was sitting on our back deck eating around our table outside and enjoying the nice weather here in South Texas, and I'm sitting there looking at my apple juice jug, and I noticed that it said made in China. And I'm sitting there going, you mean we can't grow apples in America anymore? What is this? You know, I have to go and have my apple juice either made or processed in China and brought back to the States. How is that cheaper than just growing it here and bringing it to our own local markets? And I just thought, it's gotten insane. Our food supply is in jeopardy. Our own U.S. manufacturing sector, as you know, is in complete disarray. It's all been outsourced. And now even our military contracts are being outsourced to the French. I'm sure you're aware of and heard about this big Boeing contract that had gone to the French instead of to a U.S. company, Boeing. And so we literally are completely vulnerable now to a takeover. If we are not able to sustain our own food supply, our own manufacturing of both military as well as all of our other goods that we buy, then we become dependent on all of these other countries just for our daily existence. And now they're going to hand over our highway system to these foreign entities who don't care about Americans, and they don't care about anything other than their own bottom line for their own corporate multinational company and their shareholders. And if you're not a part of that system, you're just out of luck, and you become a serf in their global fiefdom.
Well, let me interject here that in Jerome Corsi's book, he points out that the NAFTA superhighway, which then would be, the larger system in which the Trans-Texas Corridor is an important piece, would eventually, according to their diagrams and plans, would start down at Lázaro Cárdenas in Mexico. The containers would come from China, which, of course, mm-hmm. would fuel Walmart, and that one of the main investors of this entire system is the People's Liberation Army of China. Now, also as part of the proposed system, these huge containers could be scanned in with some numbers across the border. Wouldn't actually have to check through customs until they get to Kansas City. Now, it doesn't take a whole lot of imagination to realize
that's
this
right.
an incredible Trojan
horse. It's a
horse.
Huge threat to our security. Yes.
You just fill these containers up with Chinese soldiers, of which they have millions, and send them to Kansas City without checking in at the U.S. border. And they can. And of course, meanwhile, our troops are off in Afghanistan and Iraq and all over the place. So it's a huge threat to our security. And
right.
there are reasons to think that China might feel that they deserve to be the next world empire, and that North America might be their next big plum, you might say.
Have either one of you guys seen the article about Hillary Clinton going over to China and possibly in the negotiations of trying to get the Chinese to continue the debt swap to give them eminent domain?
I have read some rumblings about it. I have not seen really any major news source that has picked up on that, but I wanted to mention, too, that there was another article just today that I read on CNS News right before our time together that actually said that here Timothy Geithner was trotted out before Congress yesterday and was promising up and down that no Obama administration is not considering replacing the dollar with any kind of global currency. Within 24 hours today, he's now saying that they would consider replacing the dollar with a global currency because the Chinese are going apoplectic over the falling of the dollar and the weakness of the dollar. And, of course, whenever we are weak in an area, anyone with a brain cell that's from another country that's got its sights on global domination like China does, of course they're going to exploit our weakness in our moment of weakness. That's the whole reason why we have to remain strong and get back to a strong American manufacturing base and close down our borders from those that would potentially hurt us. And these global trade corridors are a threat to our national security for that very reason. They want a free flow of people and goods across our borders, and that, of course, means that we have no country if we don't have borders.
And I've even heard that might be the Chinese monetary system.
It could very well be. And, one thing that was frightening to me a number of years back is when I was at a lecture and somebody actually brought up the fact that you better start teaching your kids Mandarin Chinese and stop teaching them Spanish in our schools.
Well, I have to interject.
As far as your foreign language elective.
I have to insert here that back in 1987 and 86, I took a trip over to Nepal, and at the time it was possible to get a visa to go into Tibet, which of course was conquered by China in 1859. I didn't know that much about the situation before I went, but I decided to go because I, was adventurous and everything, and even though it was in the middle of the winter, I went. And I saw a level of brutality and political repression in Tibet that it defied all my imagination. And since then, I, of course, read a lot about what happened, the genocide in Tibet at the hands of the Chinese in roughly between 1949 and the present, in which over a million Tibetans were killed brutally and more out of 6 million. And I came away with the strong impression that this is a government and that is just the most brutal perhaps on the planet.
Well, yes, that's
I don't know how much they've changed. But I think the notion of a Chinese world empire is not a pretty thought.
It sure isn't, and it's really ironic when you think about it, because the globalist movement has been able to take hold of the Democrat Party in our country through under the guise of liberalism and being progressive. Here's a group of folks that generally tends to be professional protesters about everything, and here they don't realize they're falling right into the hands of potentially global domination by the Chinese someday, who will do anything to repress such free expression of political expression. And so it's true. I mean, people don't realize what's coming, and that's what we've been trying to do, is help put the pieces together of the puzzle so that people can see that this global collapse of the financial markets, how it ties in, the fact that these multinational corporations are nothing but exploiters, they're hogs at the trough. I mean, we've seen it here. The highway lobby is swarming Austin, Texas, which is where the capital is. And when the legislature is, whether they're in session or out of session, I run into folks like the Reason Foundation and these quote-unquote libertarian think tanks all the time that are pushing these public-private partnership takeovers of not just our highway system, but many of our government services. They want to do it through these public-private partnership contracts. And I don't know if you've talked about that much on your show or not, but it is a huge open door that governments walk right on through, because they're promised that, hey, you know, they've been told for years by good capitalists, and not that I'm an anti-capitalist, but they're saying this, not realizing that it's anything but capitalism. And that is what they say: hey, private sector always does everything better than the government. We're far more efficient than you. Why don't you let us just take over this child welfare contract? And why don't you let us administer a bunch of your different government programs? And by the way, we'll do these public-private partnerships to take over your highway system, because we've got the money and you don't, because you don't want to raise taxes. So what we'll do is we'll take over your highway system for you. And in return, we'll give you an upfront sum of a couple $1 billion, and you can go build even more roads with this money, and just let us have the control of this road over here, and it's only a half-century deal. It's no big deal. And, yeah, our toll rates have to be a little bit higher than what the government entities would do, but that's okay, because we're going to give you a couple $1 billion up front and make it all good, okay? So you just let us write these contracts. We're being out-lawyered at every front by these global companies that know what they're doing. And it was frightening. The other day I was in the office of a senator here in Texas who's on the Transportation Committee, and he said he was a fly on the wall of a meeting with Cintra and one of our other legislators years ago when all of this stuff came down in Texas. And he was just absolutely stunned, absolutely speechless when he heard Cintra talk about how these long-term leases, are there anywhere in Texas? We're limited to 52 years, but over in Indiana and Chicago, the Chicago Skyway deal happened, and that was a 99-year lease of our highway system there in one of these public-private partnership contracts. And the Indiana toll road was a 75-year lease. So we're talking about almost a century of some of these toll road deals, and they take their profit in the last 5 to 10 years of these deals. They're mostly losing propositions for the first 20, 30, 40, 50 years. And they get their money on the back end, and they think very long term. They are very patient, unlike the U.S. Wall Street, where it's very into short sellers and making your buck quick and, you know, turning around your company quick to try and show profits. Well, this meeting, he said, that Cintra from Spain looks at development of our country in a 1,000-year terms.
A thousand years.
So when Cintra sees a segment of road, right now we say, why on earth would anyone want to buy a toll road or pay a toll out in the middle of nowhere? Literally, it's just going through a bunch of farmland. Well, they're looking at the Blackland Prairie, which is a unique soil here in Texas that needs very little water to grow wonderful food for Texans to eat. And they are going to come take hundreds of acres, I believe it's thousands of acres, of Blackland Prairie. And central full of this, when they see these highways, they see the water rights, the mineral rights, the electricity they can generate from that region. They are going to exploit all of it and create their own little city-states and nation-states around these corridors that they're thinking 1,000 years from now that they will literally be able to recreate or shape a whole new society based on their control of buying up this stuff cheap now and being able to make just billions of dollars on this down the road.
Do you have a reference for that, Terry? Do you have a reference?
No, I don't. I really don't, other than the fact that this is what the senator was telling me when he was a fly on the wall in a meeting that he had, a closed-door meeting with Cintra and another legislator, Mike Cruzy, who's now no longer in office because he pushed all these toll roads against the will of Texans. And now Mike Cruzy, of course, is a paid is on the dole of the highway lobby and promoting public-private partnerships in these toll roads to the U.S. Congress now in Washington. So that's what happens to these guys. I mean, everyone's like, okay, well, why can't we get our politicians to listen to us? Why are they continue to do this even after hundreds and thousands of Texans have turned out at these hearings and registered their protests and have made this a radioactive issue, politically speaking? Well, it's because they know that even if they get thrown out of office, they're going to be taken care of by these private multinational corporations for the rest of their natural-born lives with really handsome salaries for now lobbying for them. They just get on the dole.
Is the governor still in power, Rick, whatever his name is?
Yes, he is. Rick Perry, and watch out for him. He has his sights on some kind of a national political office somewhere.
Yeah,
and
he
so
obviously
we,
is
we,
in place, yeah.
Well, he is.
You know, that goes back to that Administrative Powers Act that goes back to 1946, because they really created a fourth branch of government. And this government is what's really running the country at this point in time.
Robert Pastor of the Council on Foreign Relations, they know exactly how to exploit that. Here's these guys that have worked in and out of government. Whenever it's convenient, they resign from their government job, go work for consultants for these globalists, and then go back and forth. I mean, look at Gribben. I'm trying to remember his first name. It's escaping me right now. I think it's Tom Gribben. But he worked for Macquarie, which is one of the Australian firms that's doing a lot of these privatized toll road deals. He worked for Macquarie, then went and worked at the Federal Highway Administration, then got hired to do something in the Department of Transportation, and then has gone back to the private sector at different times to work for Macquarie. And that's what they do. It's a revolving door. And we see that even with our politicians and legislators. In fact, Pat Choate's book, that Dangerous Business book that Pat put out last year, he has an appendix in the back. And he names names, and he puts out how many ex-politicians that have worked as members of Congress who are now making millions of dollars as hired lobbyists lobbying for very industries that they pass legislation for. It is called Dangerous Business.
Okay.
And it's a gold mine of information on this very thing. And I'm telling you, it's by Pat Choate. And every American needs to read this. And he puts forward some very simple and quick, easy ways that we can take our government back and end these global treaties, the World Trade Organization. We need to just tell them no. We are no longer going to be a part of these global entities that are running our country into the ground and having a takeover from the inside out by bringing all these cheap goods into our country. And it's our imbalance of our trade policies that has also destroyed our manufacturing base and is really a threat to our national sovereignty and our economic security for the long term.
They got the G20 coming up next week, and that's going to really be they're going to try to railroad through a lot of this through, and you've got over 40 states right now in the position of going bankrupt, and that's going to put all those resources at risk.
Our dollar is going to be worthless in very short order, and this global currency talk isn't going to go away. That is for sure.
We're touching on so many good subjects, it's kind of frustrating. But let me just add a couple things to the things that we've said. Okay, the public-private partnerships that you mentioned, this is a way to implement Agenda 21 and sustainable development and smart growth, all these United Nations plans, which involve a kind of a threefold cooperation between multinational corporations and government and non-governmental organizations. and the bureaucratic effect of this kind of triad is to eliminate public participation, eliminate the democratic process. And I just wanted to clarify the importance of these public-private partnerships. I think that's a term that everybody needs to understand.
Needs to learn.
It's a dynamic that people need to understand. When you talk about 1,000 years of a plan here, to me this suggests a tie-in with the research that I've done on the new proposed federal energy corridors, like the West-wide energy corridor, as I said, that runs from Seattle down to El Paso. And there is a programmatic environmental impact statement which has been approved for about 6,000 miles of these corridors, which would average 3,500 feet, which is three times wider than the proposed
Trans-Texas corridor. Wow, that is huge.
It's two-thirds of a mile wide. And the proposal has got the routes established across federal land. And then the lines stop, of course, when you get to private land and state land, and the assumption is, or the presumption is, that there's going to be an awful lot of eminent domain if this goes through to
seize
the land in order to connect the line.
And this all sounds so pie in the sky to a lot of people and say, oh, come on, get real. But when you look at, of course they're not going to just come in and take these wide swaths, and the way that we operate and think today. But look at how quickly they can come in and completely undermine a free market financial system overnight with these government bailouts. I mean, at breathless speed, the Obama administration is completely socializing our entire financial system, and it can happen very quick, and they do it through the appearance of a crisis.
Well,
and as we know, we have an energy crisis in our country. We have dependence on foreign oil, and we're going to have other problems generating energy very soon. And so they're going to come in and say, oh, look, we have a crisis. And they're going to use it as an excuse to do these 3,500-foot wide energy corridors that you mentioned. It doesn't happen it can happen overnight, but they do it through a crisis, just like the Patriot Act and just like these public-private partnerships. And, in fact, you have to look for those buzzwords in legislation on your state level and at the federal level as well. We have a bill I just got word of last night that's before the Texas legislature now, and it's pending in committee, and we hope to kill it there. And it's put forward by a legislator named Carl Isitt, and he sort of seems to be taking up the mantle where Mike Cruzy left off, that's now working for this governor who's pushing all this nonsense. And they actually have a bill now that would create an entire state agency to implement and write contracts for public-private partnerships. That ought to frighten everybody, because now they're actually having pieces of legislation, and this doesn't just happen overnight. I mean, they come up with this stuff. The globalists write these things, and then they pass it off to one of these legislators who gets it passed into law under the radar screen, and then we wake up one day, and our entire public works system is handed over to private foreign companies who are going to make us pay dearly to get access to things that we need for daily living.
Well, it kind of looks to me like they're almost setting us up to be colonized by China if they're taking over our debt and getting resources in return.
Or to be colonized by the New World Order in some form of international globalist United Nations.
That's right, yes, some cooperative effort.
And, of course, if the American dollar crashes, as it seems to be now on the way to crashing, Corsi suggested that this would be then the pretext for bringing in the Amero as a currency that would be used by the North American Union of Mexico, Canada, and the United States.
Well, they're creating the financial crisis. I mean, it's not a surprise to us that this was all orchestrated by the Federal Reserve, by the World Bank. All of these guys have been printing fiat money for how many decades now, since we went away from the gold standard, really. And it allows all this kind of chicanery to happen, and the Fed pumping in all this money without there being actually any production of goods that backs that money. This is the mess we're in.
Yeah.
And
there's quite a few of them that go back to the Nixon administration and the formation of the Trilateral Commission.
That's
although
right.
There's a number of them that even go back even
much further. Much further. But going back to this idea of crashing the economy, it seems like if you have a proposed system like the Trans-Texas Corridor or the West-Wide Energy Corridor, which is going to require eminent domain, that is to say government seizure or corporate seizure of large amounts of private land, not a bad idea to crash the American economy first, right?
Right.
And then all of a sudden you can pick up that land for pennies on the dollar. And this is what I'm starting to sense, that this might be part of a long-term strategy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, I actually had found out through a different radio show that I did that they were informing me that there was an executive order, and I don't have the number in front of me. I'm not at my desk, but there's an executive order that Bush the first, Bush 41, Herbert Walker Bush, is one that actually signed an executive order for these public-private partnerships to do these pilot programs of them. And so it started way back with George Bush's father, right before Clinton took office. And, of course, there's trends of this all through the Clinton administration. We, of course, know that in full view it happened under the George W. Bush administration, Bush 43. And now we're seeing it at a breathless pace in just the first 100 days now of the Obama administration. And that's what they do. Government will capitalize on a crisis to be able to implement policies they would never get away with in times of prosperity.
Well, as Rahm Emanuel says, never let a crisis go
a unused. Good opportunity go away. Yes, exactly.
Well, yeah,
and that's what they're doing. And what's scary is with road congestion, to get back to some of the road issues, because it all seems so benign. You know, it's just they say that it's all about road congestion, but it really is about this big global agenda. And what they're doing is they're creating a crisis of congestion by starving our gas tax money. We've had a very efficient way to fund our public highway system since the interstate system when Eisenhower implemented this in the 50s, and it was all for military. It was all about security because you couldn't get our troops from one end of the country to the other in any kind of organized fashion, and you know, you'd have some really good roads and in certain cities, and then you'd go out to the more rural areas, and you could literally had, you know, dirt roads still. And so the interstate system since the 50s, we've had the gas tax, and, of course, it's a user tax. The more gas you use, the more you buy. And so it's worked very well. Well, what Congress has done and what they've done here at the state level in Texas is they've habitually raided the gas tax money. They used to have so much left over, more than they even needed to build and maintain roads, that they've now hijacked those funds and wasted them on a bunch of other pork barrel projects and congressional pet projects and obligated those funds to other things, so that now they've starved the gas tax to such a degree that now the globalists have seen a new opportunity that they can seize, and that is congestion, that everybody hates traffic congestion. They figured out that there's a certain segment of the population that has the money to be able to pay a toll to get out of that congestion, and we call them Lexus lanes here in Texas because that's what it's really about. There's a very small segment of society that can really afford to pay a 75-cent a mile toll to get to work. And that's how much these Sintra-controlled highways are going to cost. Two deals just got signed. These public-private partnership deals just got signed in Texas, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, one on Interstate 820, another on Interstate 635, the LBJ highway, ironically, in Dallas-Fort Worth areas. And they literally have a 75-cent a mile congestion toll. The rate goes down during the off-peak hours. But for you in peak traffic to go to work, we'll have to pay $6.50 one way. Now, how many Americans can afford $3,000 a year in tolls just to get to work? They can't. What we're doing is unsustainable. And I don't mean that in the sense of sustainable development, but I mean it in the sense of it's just an unsustainable economic plan. But they're hijacking and opportunists with our congestion problems because now our gas tax has been starved, and now there isn't enough money to build our roads that we need and expand the highways where needed, and they're coming in and using and they're holding us hostage until we capitulate to agreeing to these extremely high toll contracts just to get out of congestion. I mean, the road that got involved in this whole mess was right near my house, U.S. 281. It's a state highway built with federal and state gas tax money, and they've actually had the gas tax money to fix this road that is horribly congested. They've had that money since 2003, but they put the brakes on it to turn it into one of these public-private partnership toll roads, and we managed to kill the PPP on that road, but now our government agency is still holding that project hostage to the governmental entity, which is called the Regional Mobility Authority. How's that for a nice nebulous-sounding name? And these RMAs are now coming in and trying to hijack our roads, and they refuse to fix the road until people will capitulate to tolling it. Even though there's gas tax money right now that can build overpasses where they've put stoplights in the middle of our highway. So they are exploiters, and government's happy to do it. They get to push the tax increase off onto a private entity and say, sorry, we signed a contract, and in return for giving you your congestion relief, we signed a contract, and now they control the toll rate. Now they are the ones that control the highway, and you'll have to answer to them when they increase your tolls, because we can't do anything about it. It's just too bad. And we're ceding over our rights, the public's right to our own highway system.
It's really important for people to see how important it is to support you guys, because you guys are taking the brunt, and you're on the front end of this with the Trans-Texas Corridor, which is going to come in many other forms. It isn't. We've got water that's fixing to become.
That's right. Water's a big issue here. It is. It's a big issue here, and I'm sure it is around the country. And again, energy. And heating oil, I mean, all these types of things that we depend on for daily living, whether it's roads, water, gasoline, or heating oil. I mean, all of this is being slow but sure, very incrementally, being taken up by these public-private partnership type of contracts, or being controlled by global cartels like we see with OPEC. And we see it even with, cigarette companies and in some ways airlines. I mean, they're all forms of cartels in and of themselves, just like big labor is sort of its own cartel. Of course, big labor has almost gone away in this country, but now it's starting to make a resurgence under the Obama administration. But needless to say, there's a lot of these things kind of bubbling under the surface, and when you start to open your eyes and know how to identify them, that's when you can work in your community to put a stop to it. And really, local government is the way where we have the most control. Trying to steer the federal government is like, trying to steer a ship with a little, tablespoon. It just isn't going to work. And so at the local level is where we can do this. And we found a section in the Texas government code that allows us to form these planning commissions. They're called 391 commissions, because that's the part of the government code that gives us the authority to do it. And we have used those to do something called force coordination. The word coordination sounds really nebulous, just kind of benign, like it's not some really powerful term, but it really is, because almost every one of the federal acts out there, whether it's the National Environmental Policy Act, which is the environmental law that guides how the environmental process is done for these road projects. As you mentioned, an environmental impact statement for these energy corridor, they have to do that. This National Environmental Policy Act guides how these things are done. Well, it mandates that they coordinate with local government. And it's likely that in your state, there's somewhere in your state code that forces these federal agencies and your state agencies to come to the table of local government and have to coordinate with you before they can put forward this huge energy corridor through your city or town, before they can put forward this huge Trans-Texas corridor through your city or town. And we've got 9 of these commissions formed all throughout the path of the Trans-Texas corridor in our state. And we literally are having representatives from the Environmental Protection Agency and the Federal Highway Administration, Parks and Wildlife, and all of these federal agencies coming down to sit at the table of a little mayor from Holland, Texas, who's telling them, you are not going to put this Trans-Texas corridor through our town until you coordinate it with us first. And we are putting up huge roadblocks on the path of this Trans-Texas corridor, and we're doing it through local government. So I just want to encourage your listeners and your audience, and hopefully someday, Eric, for your students, to use local government, because that's where we can steer that ship a whole lot easier at a city council and county commissioner level than we ever can with some of these statewide offices, and certainly Congress, where there's so many moneyed interests that control these campaigns that make it very hard for us to make them responsive to the public. But you can do it through local government.
Well, Terry, the one thing that the people have to be aware of is Agenda 21 is there. It's one of its major agendas is to take away local control in communities and
Absolutely.
To put it into the regions.
That's right. It's regionalism, absolutely. And a lot of your urban planners, highway planners, some of these folks that you know, they're getting trained in universities to do regionalism now. I mean, they're actually taking the global agenda to our academic institutions, and people are getting certified degrees in this stuff of how they can take away our local control and our power over government.
Have you seen any of that, Eric?
Oh, yes. In fact, Michael Shaw talks about a group called ICLEI, the International Coordination of something or other. I'm sorry, I don't have the acronym right now, but it allows it's a training ground for people to from this globalist perspective to come into local communities and co-opt, like you say, the local government. And Michael, who I like I said I've had lunch with, he's been working against fighting this in Santa Cruz since for over a decade. And when I talked to him about the situation that we had in Crestwood, he said, just a second, he said, you know, some communities are really targeted by these guys. And I think that this is what is happening. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that Michael, when you say Santa Cruz, literally that was our old stomping grounds. We grew up, those were up in Santa Cruz. And
yeah.
They have had a very... That community is one of the most unique communities you could ever be in. I know in Austin, Texas, it kind of has a similar feel. They actually have bumper stickers there that say, Keep Austin Weird. And there's a whole lot of progressive kind of libertarian mix there of an area that just, it's really interesting. And so we use these things called consensus building.
Right.
Envision, they have something called Envision Texas, where they come around and they say, oh, yes, we're all for this road project now because we did this consensus building seminar with members of the community and stakeholders, and they use all these fancy terms. But what it really is, these globalists coming in to the local level and making people think that they've had input in their government, when in fact they've just been, you know, worked over by fancy slick PR firms. And in fact, some of the federal requirements for comment now on, for instance, these MPOs. An MPO is a metropolitan planning organization set by federal law, and they are supposed to be members of your city council and county commissioners and things like that sit on these boards, and they're supposed to allocate your federal gas tax dollars to whatever local projects that the locals decide on. Well, like our MPO now is taking into some of these consensus building methods, and they by federal law are required to do public comment and take into account the public comment in their long-range transportation plans. And one of the ways they're doing it now is your public comment will just not even get on the record at all, but because of how they set up the environment of how they take the meeting. That's right. They take the meeting and they do these little flip charts. And they have you sit at five different tables, and they take anyone who is a rabble-rouser or anyone they deem a dissenter, and they spread you out so that you can't infect their process, so to speak. And all of the comments that are put on these flip charts, they just slowly start to whittle your comments away, and they steer everybody to their talking points and to what they want the consensus solution to be. And none of the comments that you ever say at your table ever make it into the federal record of what they're supposed to be doing. And we're totally hip to all their plans. We figured out a way around them. But anyway, you have to watch for this stuff because they're very, very sneaky and they're very slick.
No, I've already experienced a number of them here, and they put them under the guise of the master plan, and then they try to tie all the money that these counties get to operate to grants that are tied to this operation.
That's right.
Well,
they
yeah.
do, and they figured out how to get rid of public dissent from whatever the plan is. And in our case, it was the tolling, and we didn't want them taking existing roads and tolling them. And that is what they're doing. This isn't just about new roads like the corridor. They're literally hijacking our existing highway system that's already built and paid for and turning them into a whole network of toll roads in the hands of foreign companies where they charge extremely high tolls that will price us off our roadways and force people into mass transit in the inner city, because you will not be able to afford to get around. You will have to move your home closer to where your job is, and in some cases you will have to walk or bike to work because you will have no other way to afford to make a living and to keep our existence as we know it today.
I just should interject here that if we've got a few more minutes, Melody, I know our time may be running short, I would appreciate it, Terry. I know you're busy, but I've written a couple articles that you might find interesting, and I can just mention them here also because they are available on the Internet. One of them is on Agenda 21 and the Wildlands Project and Sustainable Development
yes.
and Regional Governance, and that's at http://... WaterWatchAlliance, /agenda21. That's http://WaterWatchAlliance.googlepages.com/agenda21. And then I also have another one on the energy corridors, and it has the same prefix, http://WaterWatchAlliance.googlepages.com/energy corridors. And what I wanted to add was that a lot of the philosophical justification for putting human beings into human settlements and then freeing up vast amounts of America supposedly to for grazing habitat for big animals, etc., it comes under the name of the Wildlands Project. And it really looks pretty good to somebody who's trained as a biologist, because they're thinking, oh, yeah, we need all this land for grizzly bears, and we need it for elk, and we need it for deer. And so environmentalists are likely to think it's a good idea. But I think it's a fraud in the sense that this is a way to wrest control of vast amounts of, especially the American West, but also the East, for the ruling elite.
Yeah, and the military's doing their own version of it, too.
Yeah, yeah.
So, well, and I would love to say our website one more time. It's texasturf.org, texasturf.org, and we have a whole lot of information, archived articles and press releases from some of the things that we've been doing here. We've filed, probably 6 or 8 lawsuits now for various things, and we've been able to stop up some things that way as well. We've caught the Highway Department breaking the law over and over again. We have a unique opportunity right now in Texas to really reform what's going on inside our Highway Department. It's really infected by Rick Williamson, who's an appointee, or was an appointee by Rick Perry. And he is now, if you can imagine, he died of a heart attack from the stress of his from his job. He died very young, in his early 50s. And he was the one that really infected the Highway Department with this public-private partnership mindset. They have become an arm of the private entity and the private industry, the bond investors and all the road constructors and the Centras of the world. And here in Texas, certain state agencies have to come up for something called a sunset review every 12 years. And TxDOT, our Highway Department, is up for sunset review this year. And in this legislative session, there is a sunset bill already in the works, and hopefully doesn't get amended and changed too much. But right now, it would absolutely abolish the appointed transportation commission and replace it, we hope, with a single elected commissioner, and have them answer directly to the people of Texas for their behavior. We've caught them literally using our taxpayer money, our gas tax money, to promote the Trans-Texas Corridor and advocate toll roads and private-private partnerships on the taxpayer's own dime, which is illegal for a state agency to lobby against the taxpayer. And we caught him doing it. We got him lying under oath. We have the video linked up on our website. We have really utilized YouTube in a way that I know makes our state agencies bristle, because we catch him in the act and shine the light on what's going on, and we get the public rightly outraged at what's going on, and rattling the cages of our legislators to try and get some of these laws passed. But as I also mentioned earlier, I mean, there are plenty of bad bills. In fact, far more bad bills than there are good bills that we're trying to get passed. That we're trying to kill the bad ones and get the good ones passed. And we need as many people and as many set of eyes as we can to help us come testify at these hearings and to watchdog what's happening here. And we are kind of the beachhead, and we really hope to put the kibosh on this once and for all. There actually is a bill before the Texas legislature right now, and it hasn't been called for a hearing yet, but we are going to make sure that it does, and it's called HB 11, House Bill 11. It's by a good guy here that we've worked with, a legislator in San Antonio who's in our backyard, that's totally against all this nonsense, and it is a bill to repeal Chapter 227 of the Transportation Code, which is the chapter on the Trans-Texas Corridor. So we really hope to make big waves by reforming the agency itself, by repealing the Transportation Code, section of the code that has the Trans-Texas Corridor in it, and it really starts to restrain this and shine the light on the Highway Department's wrongdoings and really start steering it in a more taxpayer-friendly, freedom-loving way than we've had in the past.
Well, you need to be commended for the amount of work that you have to be doing on this. And in your group, it has to be, it's phenomenal what it sounds like that you guys have been able to accomplish.
Well, it seems like it falls flat because at the end of the day, all of these, wheels keep turning forward and at a speed that we almost can't hardly stop. It's at a breathless pace, but we have been able to stop many road projects. We've shined the light on many others so that they've been done in a proper way, a fiscally responsible way. And it's just waking up Texans to the fact that you cannot ever go to sleep. You have to be watchdogs on your own government. Government never fixes itself. All it does is want to grow and feed itself. And it's up to us, it's incumbent upon us to make sure that we restrain government and keep it in the limited government category and get back to a constitutional form of government, which we've so strayed away from in the last several decades, that we have to take it back because they are never going to just hand it to us. I mean, look at what happened with our founders. It took a revolution to wrest our country from the tyranny of the British at the time. So, you know, we really have to take stock in this, that it isn't just about us, it's about the next generation, and perhaps seeing if we're even going to have a United States of America over the next 1,000 years. We've seen a whole lot of empires fall throughout history, and we certainly wouldn't want the great United States of America, the beacon of liberty, the city on a hill, just disappear because we were asleep at the switch.
Before you give your closing comments, I just wanted to throw one thing out there to you, is if they're willing to look 1,000 years ahead, start looking for projects that they're already going towards so that you can start putting your foot down on those projects. I mean, because when I started looking at water, I started looking into the issue of deep underground water transportation, and I started finding all kinds of things.
Well, and I would add
absolutely.
I would add that this 1,000-year plan sounds a little bit like the Fourth Reich or the Third Reich of Hitler, which has perhaps morphed over here, because we know a lot of Hitler's top intelligence and rocket scientists and biologists came here afterwards.
Right.
I think it's possible we're looking at the Fourth Reich planning to establish itself here. But
right.
Just to get this a website again, www.texasturf.org. And
that's
correct. Do you have access to Bill Molina's movie on there, Truth Be Told?
Sure do. We do, and we have it linked from our site, and you can also go directly there at truthbetold.com, and that's Truth, B-E, and it's TOLLED.com.
Okay.
It's a spin on the word toll. It's truthbetold.com. And in fact, there's three movies he's done now, three documentaries.
Wow.
All with the same title. There's one that was called the original one, then there's the TTC edition that was the second one, and then the third one came out last fall, and it was chronicling this lawsuit that we had that exposed the Highway Department and their illegal lobbying. They literally have hired registered lobbyists in Washington to lobby for these public-private partnership deals to give them basically an unlimited totally unrestrained access to be able to convert existing highways, including existing interstates, into these privatized toll roads. It is an absolute outrage, and it just shows this lawsuit how it unfolded and the victories that we won along the way. And there's actually a state law that's working its way through the process right now, even now in the Texas legislature, and we are a big part of this. I think we're, in fact, the only reason this is happening. And it is a law that says that the Texas Department of Transportation can no longer promote and market toll roads using taxpayer money. And that would have never happened, folks, if it hadn't been for the citizen revolt that's happening here in Texas.
Wow, and he does a really fine job on those films and, production.
He's very artistic. He's actually been up for Emmy Awards on cinematography. He's done work for the History Channel and the Discovery Channel. He is a professional filmmaker, taken our cause under his wing at great cost to himself. And I know it's taken tens of thousands of dollars to produce these films, and it's worth it. It is worth knowing what's happening, not just in Texas, but how you can translate what we're doing into your city or town or community to take the reins of government back.
Well, any closing comments here before we wrap it up? We did run over a little bit here, but...
We would encourage people to, if you're truly a lover of liberty and of freedom, it takes a lot of sacrifice, personal sacrifice, to protect that. And what we have in America is a treasure. There's no other nation on the earth before or since that is like the United States of America. And the constitutional form of government, I do believe it was divinely inspired by the one true God. And it's worth fighting for.
Well, if we lose our private property, we're not going to find it anywhere else.
Well, I would just add that as well, that the rallying cry of the original American colonists was not life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It was life, liberty, and the pursuit of property. And, of course, they were very concerned about the pursuit of property because it was a feudalistic society that they were escaping from in Europe. And they realized that private property was the only way that they would be able to have freedoms guaranteed. And John Adams said as much. Without private property, you don't have freedom. And
that's right.
So this is,
if you don't have the freedom to that's right. If you don't have the freedom I'm trying to think of how you word this, but if you don't have the freedom for your own self-sustaining, for your own family to be self-sustaining outside of the grip of government, you can't do it without private property and the ability to do that yourself. And so it's a beacon of freedom that we're fighting for. And, again, it's going to take a lot of vigilance on the part of the citizens to wrest this control back from not just government but the globalists who really have they already have their plan. They have their roadmap. It's the Agenda 21. And all they have to do is follow it and implement it piece by piece when Americans are asleep and don't recognize what's happening. And remember never to, in the midst of these crises, to let your guard down. That if something doesn't sound right to you, we all knew that the government bailout that happened last October, it did not smell right to the American people, and look at what it's caused now. If something doesn't sound right to you, go back to the roots, go back to the founding documents, go back to the law and say, look, this is not right. And whether it's the free market principles of free market or if it's protecting private property rights, it is worth taking a stand, and it's worth the personal sacrifice of your time to be able to keep the treasure of the American way, you know, the United States of America and the form of government, the constitutional form of government we have, to preserve it, not just for us, but for many generations to come, so that we will continue to be the mighty force for good in the world that we have been up until now.
Can I put it one more other way? We are in the middle of a revolution, the globalist revolution, and if we want to maintain our right to property and that sort, is to get active now and not wait for something else to come down the road, because we won't have anything left to defend if we don't stand up now.
That's absolutely right.
Well, it's been a pleasure, ladies, and I would just add also that this revolution that we're in right now is coming strictly from the top, from the ruling elite. And it's most Americans and most people in the world may not see it coming, but this is a revolution of the extremely rich against everyone else. And as Noam Chomsky says, they want it all. They follow Adam Smith's vile doctrine, all for ourselves and nothing for anyone else. And I think most Americans, if they woke up to this, would realize this is not a good deal for them personally.
That's right, exactly.
Well, I want to thank you, Professor Carlstrom, and I want to thank you, Terry Hall, for a very good discussion on what's coming down the road for us.
Exactly.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Terry. Yeah.
Thank you. You all take care.
It's been a pleasure.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.